And it's slow. So, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Board of Supervisors meeting on July 1, 2015. Let's stand and say the pledge and then a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I would like to bring to your attention that Colonel, they called him Red Pulliam, had his going home services on this past weekend. We also had another citizen, an insurance man, who was an insurance man for years, and that was Nat White. And I went to his service today. They just had a wake, and they were going to have a private a funeral at the gravesite. So those are two citizens that want us to keep their families in our hearts. And now we have a special presentation. Oh, I may cry. For Jonathan.
So if we can get Jonathan,
would you come forward,
please?
Our IT?
Maybe we can get the board members
yes.
to come on.
So much for knowing how to cut on my computer anymore.
I caught him early this week. A new phone to help me.
Our IT director, Jonathan McMahon, has been with Fulgana County for 4 years and has gotten a great opportunity with Capital One on the west side of Richmond. While he'll still be a Fulgana taxpayer, he is moving to a new great job, and we wish Jonathan, Morgan, his wife, and his son Declan all the best, and we really appreciate all the hard work that Jonathan provided for our county and really moved us along on the IT infrastructure side so that we're set for many years to come. In introducing his successor, can't replace Jonathan, but his successor is Andy Notman in the back corner right here. Andy has been with the county for 3 years, a retired Air Force company. He'll be the new information technology director starting Monday, and we'll be hiring someone to replace Mr. Notman's position. So let's say farewell to Jonathan, who's done so much for our county. Fulgana County, Virginia, the Board of Supervisors takes pleasure in presenting a certificate of commendation to Jonathan E. McMahon for services as set forth in the following citation. For exceptional performance and commitment to excellence while serving as Director of Information Technology for Fulgana County from August 2011 to July 2015. During his tenure, Mr. McMahon established strong and positive working relationships with departments, agencies, constitutional offices, and staff to enhance communication and maintain an open dialogue. He brought the latest and affordable technology solutions to bear, providing advanced IT solutions to help manage growing community support needs with limited staffing. Mr. McMahon managed the successful multi-year operation software conversion to Tyler Munis by securing buy-in from stakeholders and overcoming significant internal and external threats to completion and providing superb and timely support for all users. He designed and transitioned to a highly lauded county website to improve communications with citizens, enhance user experience, and ease information accessibility. He also developed and implemented an impressive IT disaster recovery plan and an improved monitoring system for daily network operations. Mr. McMahon has been a proactive county leader, trusted advisor and colleague, and impressive professional in every respect. By his personal efforts and leadership, our county's information technology infrastructure and operations have been transformed and upgraded to meet tomorrow's needs. Presented this first day of July 2015, Lozell H. Booker, Chair.
Yeah, I know Jonathan has been real special to all of us technology brilliant people.
Well, challenge. Well, you are brilliant.
Thank you so much. Adoption of the agenda is next.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'd like to move the number 11, new business, to the beginning of the meeting, if possible.
All right, naming of the park in Court Square. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion by Mr. Sheridan, second by Mr. Allenbrook. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Okay.
So, hate to mess up your computer.
No, it's okay. I'll find it. I just have to get there. There we go. Madam Chair, members
yes.
of the board, this was a discussion that is on for new business and moved to obviously this point in your agenda. And I've got a couple slides in there if you want, or and I think they were in your package already. So, I'll
do you want to go through your report first?
Pardon?
You want to go through the county?
Well,
administrator's report first.
You can. I thought you were going to move this right to the beginning.
No. We're going to do
the report.
We're going to do the this one, naming of the park in
and then
Court
public
Square,
comments.
and then the public can. Public may want to give us some feedback.
Shouldn't we have public comments first?
No. I want to do this first. I want to give some background for the this naming of the park. First of all, I wanted to stress that at no time are we thinking about doing anything to the park. We're not thinking about moving anything or doing anything, just the way it is. The monument that we have there, the Confederate monument, is a part of our history. It's Fluvanna's history, it is my history, and that's something that we're not looking to change it. Now, what I in particular, speak for myself, want to repurpose the park. In the past, it was called Court Square. I don't think we ever gave it a formal name. When we were doing the signage in the county about a year or so, the park was named the Confederate Park. That's the only thing in the park, so it's pretty natural that the signage would say the Confederacy Park. Since then, been thinking about repurposing it so that we could have other monuments in the park. We could have a monument for our veterans of foreign war. We could have a monument for our fire department. We have had volunteer firemen who've died in the course of their duty. We could have a monument to represent Fluvanna County Historical Society celebrating their 50th anniversary. It would be a park that would be inviting to everyone. When we have special occasions, Memorials Day or whatever, we all can gather around the Court Square. And it's a very safe place to talk about the Civil War. The Emancipation Proclamation is 150 years old. There's a lot of celebrations going on for the Emancipation Proclamation. I have had conversation maybe a year and a half ago about the possibility of having a monument there for the Emancipation Proclamation. There's another thing is this book, Fluvanna County History, they have a trio of commemorations. A very, I don't know how many of you have seen this or you have read it. It is the 50th anniversary of Fluvanna Historical Society, American Civil War, and the Emancipation Proclamation. The other thing is, I have been talking to a gentleman by the name of David Baer, and he has written one of the articles in this book. I don't think a lot of us know that we have a person that was right here in Fluvanna County that was part of the Underwood Constitutional Convention. Let me just read a portion. an outcome of the Emancipation Proclamation and subsequent federal legislation was the elevation of African-American men, not women, to the status of voter and candidate for public office. James D. Barrett, a man of color and a Baptist minister from near Fork Union, successfully pursued both a voter and an office holder. Another joint resolution passed by the General Assembly on the eve of the sesquicentennial of the proclamation proclaimed that it was appropriate during the document's commemoration to recognize the bravery and dedication of those men who were pioneers in elected office. Especially Virginians should remember the 24 African Americans like James Barrett who were among the 105 delegates to the 1867-1868 State Constitutional Convention. The document drafted there was partially defined for Virginia and Fluvanna the meaning of emancipation and what role, if any, former Confederates might play in the reconstructing government. This particular gentleman right here was born in Louisa. He was out my first, of course I was back there in 1800s, but he was the first. This is exciting news. He was our first minister, 1868. He was there from 1868 to 1903. He is buried at our church. We have a lovely monument. None of us knew this history. Well, then I forget this piece of paper where he served, it's the original, but it's just a copy, in the Commonwealth of Virginia to James D. Barrett. He served 17 days. And guess how much money he made? $136. He made $8 a day. He represented Fluvanna County.
He was paid better than us.
Yeah. Then, I was invited to, on July the 6th, invited to the family reunion, Descendants of Virginians of African American Underwood Convention Delegates and Reconstruction Legislators. So on June the 6th, I'm going down with this book, his picture, and I'm gonna take a picture of his gravesite, and I will be representing Fluvanna County. And this is a full day activity. I will be the voice of this ancestor and member of Fluvanna County. I don't care whether he's Caucasian, African American, whatever. He's a Fluvannian. And I will be down for that as well. So it would be very appropriate, in my own opinion, if we could repurpose the park, we've always called it Court Square, or if we're going to leave it the name it is, whatever, that we could put some other monuments there where our kids, they come here to see the county seat. Wonderful, safe place to talk. It's hard to talk to children about the Civil War in the classroom sometimes. It has to be a very skilled teacher. But it's a good place for families to come and share the kind of the personal history. Now, we have Ms. Trish Johnson here, that I know she can correct anything if I say anything wrong. We also have Marvin Morris in the back. So that is our purpose for putting this on our agenda. Didn't want people to misunderstand. I heard some things that were misunderstood. We're not bothering out. That's our history. And is this the right time? It's always the right time to talk about Fluvanna County. I know it's a lot about the Confederate flag and all of that, and we understand. We're mature adults, and this is a good time, just a good time as any other. Anyone from the board would like to share anything?
I would like to know what the majority of people would like.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about the county?
Yeah.
Oh, and this is not.
I'd like to know what the majority
right.
of people, and this, how they feel.
And this is not an action item. This is a discussion and where we go from there to get the majority of the people, because it's never been officially named.
How did this get on the agenda?
How did you, I put it on the agenda.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm. So I think it's a good time for us just to put the discussion out there, and then we can have our citizens give us their input. Yeah. I thought we would have some people, and we may have some people today. I will open up public comment. Yes.
We'll let Mr. Nichols go with his brief.
I think it was in your package, just a couple slides
know.
There.
Did you?
The park we're talking about is just up the street here. Mm-hmm. And the whole area from the new courthouse where we are now up to the treasurer and commissioner's office, to my knowledge, was always historically called Court Square, the whole area. Mm-hmm. But there was a park in the center of it. The signage that's in there now, there's a sign there says Confederate Park. That sign was put in about a year and a half ago when we did all the signage countywide, the new green signs. When we were looking at where signs needed to go, because we had very few signs in any county buildings, the Parks and Rec or the Public Works staff asked about the park, and I said, "Well, what's the name of the park?" And I said, "I'd always heard it was called Confederate Park." We checked with the Historical Society, so and they said that they had heard the same thing. So we just put the sign up, Confederate Park, and we were putting new signs in. But subsequently, people have asked questions about it, and I think there is evidence in documentation. In various sources that I've seen, that maybe at times it was called Memorial Park, at times it was called Monument Park, but there wasn't a sign there in recent memory anyway until about a year and a half ago when we were just putting up the new signs all over. So there are four monuments in the park now, the largest monument center, and then three other smaller monuments. So if there is any board intent, that's what staff would be asking about on. Is there, we can't find anything in the record that there was a formal naming proclamation or needs to be, but is there intent of the board to do anything different with that part?
How did you come up with the,
sir?
You were in on putting up the signs. How did you come up with that name, and who did you inquire with?
Well, Public Works asked me. We asked the Historical Society. I think Miss Michelson, Judy Michelson was the executive director still at the time. Mm-hmm. And that was about a year and a half or so ago.
And she was good with that?
That's the name that was, we said, we've heard this name or this name, what should we use? And Confederate Park was the one that was recommended.
Madam Chairman, let me comment on this. Just, there's one issue that I think you should take into consideration. And that is, I think it should not be called Court Square. And the reason I say that is because, unlike some places in Virginia, Flavanna County never actually had a court square. Mm-hmm. The court area, and I don't remember what it was called. It was called Court Green, I think, something like that.
Yeah,
but it was actually 4 acres, and it was not a square. Mm-hmm. Albemarle, for example, was a square, and it was 2 acres.
Right.
But Flavanna's never was. And if you look at that, the era photograph that you had up here, Court Square ran, and I'm doing this from memory, so I may not be exactly right, but it ran approximately here down to here. Mm-hmm. It never included this building. I'm sure it never included this building, and it included the county office building. What it did include is it included the jail, mm-hmm. and there were a number of other things on it, but it was much more of a rectangle,
right.
And it ended here. And I'm sure of that because when we built this building, we had a major controversy over whether you could build the courthouse on this property because the statute required that it be either on the same property or an abutting property. And I actually had to get an attorney general opinion that we could build this building here. So I wouldn't suggest you do that.
Okay.
In my personal knowledge, which is very limited, I'm not going to say I'm an expert by any means. I had always heard it called Confederate Park, too. And when we referred to it, when we were dealing with that the purchase of this courthouse property and various other things, that's how I saw it referred to historically. I'm not aware that there was any official action ever taken.
Mm-hmm. Now, didn't we used to have a committee that...
Yeah,
what was that called?
That was beautification.
And they were dissolved.
I understand
that.
That
was
we did
green. think it was.
Yeah, it was a court green.
The court green committee.
It was for flowers and plantings and historical significance of the types of bushes and things like that.
You know, the timing was what I basically questioned, because Fluvanna County, thank God, is quite different than lots of places in this country and in this world where we're community oriented, and we all have respect for each other, and you know, I just don't.
That's why we could bring it up.
And that's why we could bring it up.
Yes,
I don't disagree with you.
Definitely. Because we are community.
And I think about 99% of the people in this county had no idea that.
They didn't know it was a.
Even a park there.
Fluvanna's idea.
And when I saw this was on the agenda, the only thing, well, number one, I learned a lot of stuff, just like you did. I did a lot of research, and I learned a lot of stuff, and some of it about Fluvanna, some of it about everything else, and I'm sort of thankful for that. A lot of stuff that I don't even want to know. That I don't even want to know. And personally, you know, the I don't know how to put it. It's the Confederate war that we've had a lot of wars.
It's a war of northern aggression, Bob. Kidding. Go ahead.
Yeah, you think I just know about Russian wars?
Go ahead.
See, I can laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was northern aggression.
Right.
And being from Boston, I know all the monuments they have up there. You know, Stone Mountain is a large monument for Robert E. Lee, and it was built by the same guy that built Mount Rushmore. In fact, it was his first attempt, and he screwed it up, and they fired him. And I didn't know that a week ago, and I really didn't care.
So this really prompted you to
get
really
history. Got me educated.
Yeah.
Those 5 years in fifth grade just didn't teach me. So it's history, I guess, and you made that point. And I don't want to change history. I don't think it should change. I think we should remember it, because if we don't remember it, we repeat it. And history doesn't make sick, deranged people the way they are. And there's nothing that you or I can do anything about how some people act. And by taking visual things that don't hurt people away doesn't solve the problem. You're always going to have deranged, sick people in the world that see things in a deranged way and do things that we normal people think can't even imagine. And that's going to happen, and it's always happened that way. You know, even going back to, I did some research, and I didn't know it, but 11 U.S. Army military posts are named after Confederate soldiers. Mm-hmm. And I was shocked. In fact, I've served at 3 of them, and I didn't even know that. Never gave it a thought. And they did that because of the united military.
And it played a part in history.
It played a part in history, but there was respect for their military expertise. And all of those posts are down the East Coast, from here to Georgia. And I never knew that. Never knew it. Then I looked up, because I got curious, and looked up how many football and baseball teams in the United States are named the Rebels. And I thought that I could come up with maybe 10 youth football teams. And I gave up when I was over about 75. And about six of those were in Virginia. Youth football teams. And college football teams, you've got Ole Miss, who's the Rebels, and you've got UNLV, who's the Rebels. And they're sure as heck not changing their names. None of the military boasts.
They're trying to change the Redskins. So.
And that's a whole other story. Mount Rushmore was built on Sioux burial ground. And that was like holy ground to the Sioux Indians. And it was ignored. By the way, it was built for $1 million and 500,000 of it was put in federal government money. And so it goes on and on. And we went for how many years before this country was able to recognize the Vietnam War veterans? And now that memorial's there. Now someday someone may get offended by that and decide that wants to come down. I don't know, maybe 100 years from now. I mean, they're sure as heck not teaching it in school anymore. No one knows about the Vietnam War, no less World War II and Korean War. You go ask kids on the street, they don't have a clue. Maybe even about the Civil War. I don't know. I don't know. I hope that's not the case. So I have no problem changing the name if it's not a PC thing. I mean, if it's not going with what the media and what a few people consider a solution to a problem, because it sure as hell isn't a solution to a problem. I don't know what that solution is, and I don't think anybody does. And unfortunately, it's just the way life is, and I don't have an answer for that, and it makes me sad. And by me saying all this, you know that I have had the utmost respect for you before I came in this board, and your knowledge and your dreams, and I think they're all good. I don't agree with a lot of the ways, or some of the ways, but we've always agreed to disagree or to discuss, and we've never had that problem. This one, I just, the timing and you know, and it's been sitting there for over a year. The timing of it was just suspicious to me, and I think you probably understand that. But if it's for all the right reasons, I've got no problem calling it Memorial Park or Monument Park or whatever is, you know, but I'd rather not, but if that's what... What?
It's not what I think, it's what...
No, but you brought it up, and I just want to, you know, and if we take a deep look at what's in this county, and that's what I did, and I was a little shocked. You know, we have a painting in the old courthouse of John Hartwell Cott, who was one of the largest slave masters in Fluvanna County, and I think we call him the father of the county. Mm-hmm. And we have this humongous painting up there that's been there for 150 years, mm-hmm, commemorating that.
Well, there's another fellow who was a slave owner, lived right up the road.
Oh, I know.
Pretty important house, named Monticello.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
I'm not trying to be.
I'm not going in.
Anytime you talk about historical figures from that time, you're going to deal with that.
You're going to deal with that. But also, when you look at Confederate Park, and that commemorates that monument commemorates the Confederate soldiers from Fluvanna County that died during the Civil War, and just like the Vietnam War, before the Vietnam War, and I'm old, I didn't even know where Vietnam was. I couldn't find it on the map if you had a blank map.
History major.
Yeah. Just like most of the kids that have gone to Afghanistan and Iraq couldn't have picked out either of those countries before they were sent there. And a lot of those folks that died and served in the Confederate and the Union Army had no choice.
That's right.
And most of them were not slaveholders, and they didn't never had a thought of being. And it was simply the times, and if you were 14 years old or older, you were handed a gun and a scratchy uniform and sent out to do what you do. And a whole bunch of, you know, our own families were fighting against each other. So it's something that's not to be forgotten, and it's something that every time you walk past it, someone asked me why I had my picture taken next to it, and that was a couple of years ago. And part of it is I'm a history buff, and it's a memory kind of thing. And there's a lot of folks still here in Fort Vanna County who have relatives that were from the time. And their great-great-great-grandparents were, you know, there's a lot of memories. And, you know, and I always say I'm not here to change history, I'm here to make history. And I truly believe that. I don't think that any of us should be changing history.
Well, I think that the question, if I may, is...
you should have hit me a long time ago.
Right, yeah. I think the question is, you know, been brought to light, and I like Mr. Weaver's idea of, you know, if the county has a question about it, since it's been brought to light, we can certainly have folks recommend names for the park. You know, the discussion in the social media, the discussion maybe around the community, around the naming of the park, is apropos given the events that happened recently. And I don't think anybody's intention is to eliminate history. In fact, we should all be proud of the history. And, you know, I'm sure that the volunteers that signed up and on the south side and the volunteers that signed up on the north side each believed they were doing the right thing. And if you go, say, on Memorial Day and you ride your bike or you drive along the highways and you pass some old cemetery, it's not uncommon to see Confederate flags and Union flags both on the grave markers there. So there's no question that Virginia is a site of history. It's a site of the Civil War, and you know, it's certainly part of our history. And so having a park, which, you know, 3 weeks ago nobody would have really paid attention to the name, having a name that was sort of put there just kind of, you know, to try to highlight a marker, nothing beyond that, and then now having an event that sort of begs the question as to what should we do? I've heard some good ideas in the community, and maybe some good ideas of just expanding and recognizing service members that have died in the war that are from Fort Vanna as well. And I thought that was really nice thought. So Memorial Park comes to mind. You know, we can keep it as is, and I don't think anybody will care about that too much more in a few weeks. But by the same token, now that the question is here, if we want to put a vote out to the community, say, what do you think would be a good name? And if we want to recognize, and I like Mrs. Booker's idea of recognizing the 150th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation, and you know, tie that in, well, terrific. Those are some good ideas that can help to enhance the historical nature of the village of Palmyra, and make it yet another reason why people can come and visit us and reflect on the past and reflect on the future as well, too.
Remember, we have Dixie that commemorates
first and second
World War.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anyone else have any comments before I open up for open to public comments? If you all are finished, I think we've had good conversation, good history lesson.
We have cemeteries that are old enough that.
Yeah.
With one of my classes, I've been honored enough to, we've gone out and put flags on the graves before Memorial Day. And to watch the pride that the kids, we did it at Burr Chapel. Every cemetery that's old, that dates back to the Second World War, has people from Fort Vanna County that are buried there that have served the country proudly.
Yes.
I mean, hey, I'm going to give Mr. Moss a name in a little while. My mom, I had this conversation with her, and she was bringing up one of her classmates that went up Mount Suribachi. I'll give you a name. You can look up and make sure it's correct before you leave. You know, he was a 44 graduate. He graduated in 43 so he could go serve. And he was in the first platoon, had a gold-bound book.
Great history.
Yeah. Heck, I had a class, well, not a classmate, he was a year younger than me. He flew Air Force Two. He was an Air Force pilot. He was Al Gore's pilot. You know, Lieutenant Colonel Steve Jackson. There's another tribute to a guy. That's a pretty important job when you're flying those guys around.
That's right. Okay, thank you all so much for the for our discussion. And now I will open...
is there any direction for staff?
Let's do public comments. Yeah, let's get to public comments. I will open for public comments. Would you like to come forward to the mic and give your name and address?
We're a little out of order, but it's okay. We'll catch up.
Huh?
We're a little out of order on your agenda, but we'll catch up.
I know it. I forgot you, didn't I?
It's okay. We'll come
all
back.
All right. We're back up to you when we finish. Okay. Thank you.
Am I on our own?
Yes.
Marvin Moss from the Columbia District. I'm here tonight as the president of the Lucana Historical Society. We've done a lot of research on this question, and it's very interesting. As you can imagine, the dedication of the Confederate Memorial there was a very, very important event attended by hundreds and hundreds of people, and it had very wide press coverage in the Midland newspaper, which was the local newspaper at the time. And there was never any mention of naming the little area around the memorial as a Confederate park. If it became something along that lines later on, it was sort of an oral tradition, I guess, that grew up. We also have talked to Minnie Lee McGee, who probably is the most knowledgeable historian in Fluvanna County and certainly the reigning expert on the history of the village of Palmyra. She recommends very strong, first of all, she confirms that it was never ever by any official action of any body named the Confederate Park. We also have right now, she would really prefer to see it renamed the Palmyra Memorial Park or something of that nature. We also have a member of the Historical Society who would like to donate a suitable small stone, I won't call it a memorial, but a significant indication of the importance of the Emancipation Proclamation. And it, of course, would be up to Fluvanna County where that's located. It could be at Maggie's house. It could be at the entrance up there where the millstone is. It could be in the park where the Confederate Memorial is. But the important point here is that that space could become a memorial to more than just the Confederate soldiers who fought and died and certainly deserved to be honored in the Civil War. So I would just, as president of the Historical Society, urge you to give serious consideration to this, which you obviously are doing, and that perhaps we should go in the direction of renaming it the Palmyra Memorial Park or the Memorial Park or something along those lines. I think that would really be the most appropriate thing for it. And it would also give us the flexibility of adding additional memorials to that little plot of land. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
I'm Steve Shaney in the Cunningham District, and I don't have lots of facts, but I have a little bit of an opinion. The courage of the men who fought and died in that war should always be remembered. That's important on both sides. But the organization, the Confederate States of America, was an association of states whose purpose was almost entirely, in the beginning, to preserve the institution of slavery. That's what all of the secession documents of all of these states say, and it seems to be pretty clear. It's late in the 19th century that states' rights become added to a list of what they were fighting for. Mostly people fought for the guy next to them, they fought for their own home, and they fought because their neighbors fought. So my sense is that I would prefer to see the name changed from Confederate Park. Confederate, to me, implies the political sense of trying to preserve slavery. But Memorial Park does not bring that goal into this picture. It's talking about honoring people and their sacrifices. And so that's basically my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Frank Gallo, Palmyra District. What I've heard here is that about a year ago, a sign went up Confederate Park without any historic basis, without any formal dedication. And if that's correct, just take the sign down. Memorial, for many years, probably decades, memorialized only one thing, and that was the Civil War. And that's regrettable, but memorial is a flexible term, and if we can go back to it, we will have solved many of these problems. I have a hacksaw in the back of my car, and we can take the sign down tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Dell. Anyone else? If not, I will close the public comment.
Looks like you have one more.
One more?
Yep.
Oh, I'm sorry. Come on in, Ms. Murdoch.
Deborah Murdoch from Columbia District, and I'm Vice President of the Historical Society. I would like to think in terms of the future, not the past, and I would like to see it be inclusive, to include all those who may have fought and died, who came from this county, and therefore I would suggest Memorial Park is more inclusive.
Thank you.
And just a point of clarification, there's lots of documentation that shows the name Confederate Park in county documents, so it's not without precedent. That's why the sign went up. Comprehensive plan documents, historical society documents use the name Confederate Park with capitals as a formal naming. That's why the sign went up that way, because it's what was commonly used, and so the sign went up for that reason.
Okay.
I don't know that there's any proclamation either, but it's been well documented through the years.
Right. Okay, so I do close the public comments and give the staff some directions. If you want to put it on fan mail or whatever and have input, don't you have, isn't there somewhere else that you get input?
Maybe we can get the Savannah Review to
perhaps
point
Savannah,
to that as well, too.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll come up, so I'm just guessing.
Maybe
they can recommend to vote, go to fan mail.
Yeah.
And if we could, we could just have people comment on my two cents on the county webpage.
Sure.
Because
right.
Anyone can comment through there at any time. If they don't have web access, they can certainly
right.
contact our office. We'd be glad to take your question anytime.
All right.
But it's a simple way for people to
So the action would be to, you know, we'd like your thoughts on what we should name the park. Is that essentially what the action item is?
And it could be some. You could say the Monument Park, whatever. I think you'd have to give a little bit of history, some concise but clear, and then let people respond.
This name was suggested at the meeting, and we're looking for other suggestions. If
right.
you'd like to cast a vote, go to the county website and give your two cents worth.
And, I mean, we can do a very simple, easy special survey where people just click on a button and check it. A, B, C, or other, and they put other in there if you want.
All right. So are you clear on what we can do?
We won't need to go on an agenda. I'll just put it out. If that's the will of the board.
In
30 days or so, you can come back and I have some data for you.
And I do think that we should follow up on the Historical Society's recommendation, especially since there's a donor willing to provide the marker for the emancipation. I think that's something we should consider as well. Sure.
Yes. Okay, well, thank you all very much for that. That is invigorating. Now the Board of Supervisors updates.
Mr. Nichols.
First. County Administrator.
County Administrator.
County Administrator.
She's bound and determined to forget me today.
I'm bound to pass you out.
It's okay. Mm-hmm. Just a couple of quick things, Madam
yes.
Chair, members of the Board. The Finance Department achieved again the Certificate of Achievement in Excellence in Financial Reporting. It's the right. Done by the Government Financial Officer Association. So kudos to them. The annual report was excellent as well, and so that's how the award is obtained. And one of the reasons it's recognized is for transparency of financial data and ease of access for financial data, as well as the annual report. Cheryl Elliott was recently recognized from the and there's a typo there, sorry, from the American Red Cross for her work on the Children's Pillow Project recently, where kids get to decorate their own pillowcases and put then emergency supplies in. So that's what they take when there's an emergency, they have to leave home. It's a great way to get children involved in preparing for emergencies in a fun and interesting way. And the Red Cross recognized her at their annual meeting recently. Tonight is the class graduation at St. Peter's and Paul Parish Hall for the Charlottesville Investment Collaborative Workshop, the Flavanna Louisa Workshop. Graduation and the class is finished, and tonight from 6 to 8, and we have a representative from the county going. Mr. Popowitz will be going to represent the county, depending what time
good.
We get done.
Because I know we're not going to get out of here.
Probably not.
No.
If I don't talk, we will.
And too late.
That's right.
Christmas already went back. We officially take over the wastewater treatment plants, Mr. Stevens and his staff, today from the school system. The other bad news that goes with that today is that the gentleman who has been managing those wastewater treatment plants and doing the legal certification overview of them was a gentleman that worked had another local job and then did this part-time for the county and came and checked those different the wastewater treatment plants. We've just learned today he has taken a job about an hour and a half away from here and will not be able to continue in that role, so we're going to have to find other contractor support to do that. One of our staff in the 14th Sanitary District and part of Public Works, Mr. Smith, once he attains his certification, he'll be able to do part of that, but we still need a little bit of stretch to support the operation that we took over from the schools. The funds for that work was transferred from the schools, but I'm not necessarily convinced that we will be able to get someone else to do that same thing as reasonably priced as we did that gentleman who did it part-time because he had a job in the area. But just a heads up for the board, and Mr. Stevens is working on that issue and obviously is a subject matter expert, but we'll need to find the right kind of support to review those facilities on a daily basis. And then your next regular meeting is on the 15th at 7 p.m. There's no work session scheduled, and a couple of public hearings that night, but Wednesday, July 15th. And then reminder just for August, your August 5th meeting will be at 4 o'clock and 7 o'clock, and then no second meeting in August. Remember, you do a 4 o'clock and a 7 o'clock, and then no second meeting in August. And so those are the upcoming meetings. Any questions I can answer for the board?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Not about this. Do we know anything about the grass and park here in the little sections? Did you find that?
Yeah, I talked to Mr. Stevens about it. The grass historically along those sections, there was always a grass median
yes.
strip along there.
Mm-hmm.
Those were always taken care of by the owners of the property in front of those
okay.
homes. And
all
so
right.
it hasn't been added to the public works list. It's the person who does mows the lawn, because the strip is so narrow now,
mm-hmm.
one mower will cut the strip, but it was always taken care of historically by the people that owned
okay.
the property in front. So that's the plan for that.
Yeah, so how do we
get the word
they
out?
Haven't, yeah, because they
the,
haven't
the mayor,
of,
the mayor of Fort Union is going to have to
who
remind
us. Who's the mayor of Fort Union?
Whoever you say, ma'am.
you?
Your district.
Initials were M and D.
So I guess I better get the lawnmower out.
Well, yeah, one of the things I'm not sure exactly how to do this, but pardon me. Coming into Fort Union,
mm-hmm.
the streetscape doesn't cover the entire strip, but coming into Fort Union on the right-hand side, once you go past the empty lot where the hotel was,
mm-hmm.
On the right-hand side of the street before it gets to the post office, there are lots and lots of weeds that are coming through
yes.
the cracks in the concrete and the cement.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking maybe a
Fork Union Workday, if we can get some citizens out to come out and help us, I'll invite them to volunteer and do it on a weekend too. So we can clean some of those areas up and do some spraying and things like that, right?
Yeah,
because it really looks so beautiful when you get a little past it, but just past the white building on the right, from there down until you get to the new concrete, it looks pretty yucky.
Yes,
but
it does.
So we can mow that, but then maybe some citizens will come out of their houses to help out too, and we can remind them that when they're mowing, can they just grab that strip right down the front?
Okay.
Take them 30 seconds.
So I'll try to get, right, I
all
agree.
Right. Well,
it's a very fast thing. I'll try to see if I can get something organized for a weekend and see if we can get some citizens out.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Any other questions? Now we will have our Board of Supervisors updates. Do you have anything, Mr. Sheridan?
No, ma'am. None of my stuff met.
No.
Kind of slowing down in the summertime.
Thank you.
I do have the stream.
Ooh, one. Let me.
Yes.
The 15th. I probably should have done this beforehand, but I'm going to be on vacation.
Okay.
Okay.
My family surprised me with a trip.
That's nice.
So. Where are you going?
Do they have room for one more?
Come on. You got to wear your Mickey Mouse ears. No, I'm not getting any word.
I'm not going to Disney World.
Shark Week.
Sorry.
These are the reports I got from Ravana.
Oh, Streamwatch.
Basin Streamwatch. And Fluvanna, is it, we're good or fair? It's not bad.
Very good.
Huh? Very good. They had 50, they did 30 streams the last time we got this report. This time they did 50. And so we're doing very well. We don't have any poor. And we have a lot of people out here that get in the Ravana River and do these tests. And I don't know who they are, so I've asked the Ravana River Basin to let me know who these people are, so I don't know.
You know, that's really interesting. Here it says each insect has a pollutant tolerance rating from 0 to 10 used to score the sample. That's I never realized it.
Yes. They have a lot of extra information in here, interesting information.
You have to get an insect grant, a federal grant to study.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so, and the other thing that I went to was Central Virginia Partnership for Economic Development at Nexus, and our county administrator is now the chair of the board of directors for the Central Virginia Partnership.
That's good. That'll keep my trouble.
No increase in pay, but.
And we had an interesting conversation with Mr. Jerry Ping. China came over here, and they're using corn shucks, right, from the fields to make paper. And they're in Chesterfield, but they're looking, and they.
China's in Chesterfield?
No. Their company is coming over here.
Transplanting. $2 billion investment in U.S. paper.
And what was so interesting was...
And you're using corn stalks.
Corn stalks
and other byproducts to make recyclable paper products. He brought a bunch of them with him.
And the paper products are not white. They're like beige because they don't use bleaching.
Right.
But it was so interesting for him to say they looked all over the United States. You know, there's corn in other places.
There is.
It's much more than we produce.
Real funny.
But Virginia was the best place to do business. They said when they came into Virginia, everything was lined up. Everybody was ready to go.
And it didn't hurt that he's a Darden graduate from
UVA. He's a Darden, right.
The guy from China?
Jerry Pang, yes. One of the senior vice presidents for that corporation.
Mm-hmm. And he selected three people, most of these young Chinese fellows who's with him, they went to Darden as well. And he had three or four from Charlottesville area, from Virginia, working with him. But it was a very interesting conversation with him. Okay, do you have anything?
Use my time.
I'm sorry.
I attended Social Services meeting last week.
Last Monday.
And
once again, we're losing people, mm-hmm. and treading water. You gain two and you lose two, and it seems to be a something that we need to address down the road, because we're a training ground for
Alamo,
yeah, for the localities, Henrico, Charlottesville, Alamo, and we keep losing well-trained, valuable people to other localities to do the same exact job. And you know, and I just would like to see somewhere down the road that we, you know, I don't mean to say that we can pay the same that other localities do, but you know, something other than money maybe, or something other than what we're doing now to try to keep talented folks here, and you know, mm-hmm. you know, it's just good for the community if we're ever constantly retraining people and going shorthanded. It's sad. And we got some state and federal money to put some another part timer on the Medicaid application staff, because we're I think 180 days backed up in Medicaid applications, and that's a direct result from Obamacare. The Affordable Act is unaffordable to a lot of elderly folks and folks that can't afford health care, and they're being advised to go to the Medicaid route and before they apply for Obamacare. So the applications are just coming in faster than you can humanly go through them. And a waiver has been passed so that, I think it was 30 days mm-hmm. they used to have to be acted on. Now the waiver leaves it wide open. But unfortunately, a lot of folks that need the program are sitting on the phone every week calling in saying, what about me? And you know, and it's because of personnel shortage, but that extra person is going to be able to pick up and get us rolling on that. So there is work being done. And once again, thank you for putting me on that board.
Okay. Mr. O'Brien?
It was in the PWN council meeting, we had appointed, I had recommended Victor Schaff during that meeting to be a representative for our board. During that meeting, the board members there showed a strong preference for Mrs. Gottlieb, who is with the Vanderlyn Recycling Center.
Okay.
And so after some discussion back and forth, and the preference was strictly due to industry, not due mm-hmm. to the personnel, and they want to find a role for Mr. Schaff in another location, but due to the discussion around that, I mentioned the will of the board and said that this was probably the will, but the vote ended up with Mrs. Gottlieb yeah. being appointed for that position. When we're lucky to have both citizens serving, and I know that we plan to reach out to Mr. Schaff yes. separately. Second, we did have two appointments from Fluvanna. Bobby Popowitz for economic development, and Mrs. Keller for representing the schools as part of the PWN council. Oh. And the school position that was being put up had a lot of competition, and it was highlighted that the efforts that we've been doing and working towards providing why am I drawing a blank here?
Career tech
training. Thank mm-hmm. you very much. The efforts that we've been doing in Fluvanna's high school for career tech, and in combination with Piedmont, made that a great liaison. And one of the members also mentioned that we have a high school to be very envious of, and we have the resources there to help do that. So
Ms. Keller got in.
So Ms. Keller is going to be our representative. They have big plans for her there as well too. So Fluvanna is well represented in the PWN council. From that standpoint. With regard to the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission, they're just finishing up their year's budget, and they had projected a minor loss which is an improvement over the previous year, because there was a pretty significant loss from that standpoint, but under the leadership of Mr. Boyles and some growth there, they don't have the loss, and they're projecting a gain for next year. Back to PWN Council real quickly. There are some changes in terms of the ruling, so there's going to be some challenges financially with the PWN Council.
Are you saying they overspent their budget?
No, what's happened is the grant, the federal regulation.
Well, they had like $1 million or something a year back.
It's the allocation formula that they use, and the way that they have to allocate the formula now is very restrictive. And they used to be able to kind of move monies from one program to another program. And due to the nature of the type of industry that we have and the type of programs that we have and how they're suited, they can't do that any longer. And there's been some back and forth at the state level in terms of kind of inside state bickering in terms of the programs there. And the net impact is it's leaving the council in a position where they may be short funded here in the next 6 to 8 weeks. So that's a challenge there, and they will eventually, unfortunately, based on these formulas, will have to make adjustments to personnel, and that, of course, is a pretty tight budget to begin with, so they won't be able to serve, and they won't be able, it's a catch-22, not only will they not be able to serve properly, but they won't meet their mandate. So we're expecting some changes from the state there, but there are some challenges there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, yes. A couple things to add. Ms. Gottlieb from Van Orden Recycling is an excellent candidate. She just wasn't on your slate of candidates because she had never put in an application here. Her name popped up later through PWN because of relationships. Mm-hmm. Excellent candidate. So is Mr. Schaff, and hopefully they both have an opportunity to support and represent our county. And echoing Mr. Olenbach's comments, Ms. Mabe and I met last week, too, to talk about those dollars coming in for part-time support. Those are dollars that the state of Virginia sent out throughout the counties, throughout all the counties in the Commonwealth and the cities. And our share was about, I don't know, $15,000 or $16,000. So it'll pay for some part-time support to help do catch-up on backlogs of Medicaid applications. But that's the same in every county around the Commonwealth. Right. And in addition, we also, Ms. Mabe and I talked about the sustaining workforce, especially on their newest entry employees and the can't say social worker, a family service specialist, because there's such a high turnover rate because people can come in here, get a little bit of experience, and then go make more money elsewhere. She and I talked about meeting again. Ms. Parrish, our HR manager, has a number of good ideas that may help strengthen their recruitment and retention by maybe tiering some things a little differently. Now, state may have to prove part of it, but I don't think it'd be any strong changes that wouldn't be able to be done reasonably close within their budget structure. But we really do need to work on longer-term retention in that department. So,
and it's kind of difficult to hire county people because they have to go through the state, sure. And the state ranks them. And so you may not even be aware that you have somebody in the county on your list, right. Anyway, way down here, because right. They're competing with everybody all over the state. So we have people here that I know that have applied over and over again who live here, and I feel that they could do a good job and they would stay, you know, and they could do that training, but sometimes they get somebody and they never get to their name.
Not that this is a perfect solution, but some counties have done that. One of the ways counties avoid that problem is by having social services serve as a local department, because mm-hmm. then you have much more control
over
how you hire, what you bring in, what your structure is. You still have to follow state rules, you still have to follow state guidelines. Louisa make that change. Many other counties have done the same thing, but it's that would be a substantive change, but maybe the kind of thing that would support their structure better.
So. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, we do not have a public hearing this afternoon, so we will go to our action matters. And the first one is contract approval for Task 2 Emergency Communication Radio System Consultant Joe Rodish, Procurement Officer, and Cheryl Elliott, Emergency Services Coordinator. And congratulations, Cheryl.
Madam Chair, members of the board, thanks for having me tonight. This is the second part of the consulting management services that we procured last year around this time. Back in August of 2014, we brought to you all the first task order for RCC consultants to help us out with developing a needs analysis. And from those needs analysis, we developed our RFP, and from that point, we were able to issue a solicitation for a provider for a radio system. Since we have completed that phase of it, we're now on to phase two, which is actually going to be the project management portion of the project, to where they're going to actually help with Motorola and ensuring that the county is receiving everything that has been agreed to this point. They will attend all project meetings, help with any sort of interpretation of the contract as we see fit. And so it's they will be working with Cheryl Wilkins in coordination to help make sure this project goes as smoothly as possible. The cost of the project, or cost of this second task order, is a total of $99,943.52. We had to break it up into two sections, or two task orders, from the original contract based upon the amount. There are some professional services that go along with this contract, and based upon the Procurement Act, you have to limit it to $100,000 per task order. You can't exceed it. So that's why we're come tonight for task order number two. As you can see, with the budget, there are some contingency funds available, which equates to about $286,000. So what I have in front of you all tonight is the motion to approve task order two for RCC consultants to help out with project management services relating to the radio system.
All right. Did you have something else, or can we go ahead and have any questions?
I don't have any.
Anybody?
I know I talked to Mike, and he said that they've been invaluable, just having their expertise side by side.
Good. And they have. I mean, the professionalism that Mr. Stack brought to the table when dealing with Motorola has been invaluable to the county. His experience in these projects, he's worked many of these projects throughout the state, and everyone has had nothing but high remarks of Mr. Stack and of RCC. And we are we're grateful to him for contracting with us so we can
Okay, Ms. Booker, I move to approve task order number two of the agreement for emergency communication radio system project management and system implementation services with RCC Consultants Incorporated in the amount of $99,943.52, and authorize the county administrator to execute the task order subject to approval as to form by the county attorney.
Second.
All right. It has been motioned by Mr. Sheridan and seconded by Mr. Ullenbrook. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, Fluvanna County Employee Appreciation and Recognition Program is Gail Parrish, our Human Resources Manager.
This is just you, Dan Chow.
Familiar.
Yeah.
I brought a crew with me.
Look out, you got backup.
I'd like to first introduce the people who worked for 2 years developing this.
Yes.
Some of them are here tonight. So great. I'll introduce the ones that are here. Uh-huh. The rest of the team is mentioned up there. Melinda Payne, who represents Parks and Recs. Jackie Myers, administration. Liz McIvey, with the library. Sandra Parrish, for the courts. The rest are, where's Cheryl? Cheryl not standing up. Cheryl Elliott is also one of our members. She's here tonight. Lisa Shiflett is with the Commissioner of Revenue's office. Kathy Sexton is with the Commonwealth Attorney. Deidre Creasy and Amy Helfrich is with the Community Development Department. Laura Donovan and Linda Danzi are with the Social Services. Carol Owens is the other representative from the library. They had to have one person at least tonight at the library. Will Shaw represents Public Works. Captain Von Hill and Sergeant Barbara Henson are for the Sheriff's Office, and Linda Linhern and Gloria Vest are the Treasurer's Office. So as you can see, it's not just me, and I said when I stand up here, I don't want you all to think it's just me bringing something forward. A lot of hard work has gone through working on not just this project, many others from the Tiger team. So I told him tonight, I said, since we're bringing this back, I want some support standing behind me.
Who on earth would have a problem with this?
Gee.
Okay, they're doing their job.
No, they're also here if you have any questions of them also.
Thank you.
As I presented last time, part of our recognition program is to create a website to post different Pride recognitions. There is in your packet a sample of how that. Do you have that in there? Yeah.
Yes.
No. It's a sample of how the people would, there it is, the recognition form, and it would be either in hard copy or, and also we will have it on the website. It's very similar to my two cents. They can click in, fill it in. We will review it, and then we will have be working with the IT department to develop a separate page on our website so that the recognitions can be publicly viewed. The other piece is the Pride in Public Service Annual Awards. This would include we have an annual awards selecting committee, the single annual Pride in Public Service Award, which would be the grand prize, and then five annual PRIDE category awards. We also included, which is on the spot awards, it's a training teaching our managers and supervisors how to do on the spot. That's, in our opinions, and mine in particular, the most important part of this recognition award program. And then we also recommended continuing the annual service awards program and the retirement recognition program. That was no change made to that. What we did on the change when we brought this back was we changed the annual Pride in Public Service Award to one-time bonus of $500. And five annual Pride category awards would be a one-time bonus of $250. If any groups were selected, they would divide that money up. It would be just that amount. So the total amount per year would be $1,750. And that's basically the difference
now
in what we brought back.
Every year you may not have a Pride person, a top person.
No, they don't have one.
Most likely we would. Unless we had, we did absolutely nothing through the year.
Okay. All right, we have questions.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the Fluvanna County Employee Appreciation and Recognition Program. And yeah, that would be
second.
All right, we have a motion by Mr. Allingbrook and second by Mr. Bryant. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right, Chair votes aye.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much for your hard work. And
I'm glad to see you, Bob. We're on the same party line here now. Come around.
Join the box.
Thank you. Now we have Jason Smith, Parks and Recreation. He's going to tell us about the Heritage Trail Foundation funding your fitness trail.
How much do you
Madam Chair, members of the board.
Oh, we get to thank the Historical Society.
I'm happy to be with you guys tonight to talk to you all about the $10,000 gift.
Wow.
that our friends at the Heritage Trail Foundation voted last Thursday to provide the county. You can see the picture below. The 20 station Fit Trail system is very rustic. It would fit really well into the park, into that area. I'll get to a map where we'd like to place the equipment. Again, the Heritage Trail Foundation, which has throughout the years done so much for not only the county but for Pleasant Grove Park, voted unanimously last Thursday to provide this $10,000 towards
and
this
I
package.
I see it has the pulse up there to tell you how to use that part.
Correct.
The equipment.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah. Each station would have an instructional guide, if you right. will, a sign at each station to show you exactly what to do.
What's the base on that? Sand?
It's optional. I've seen sand, crush and run, gravel, mulch, natural grass.
That could be anything.
I never could walk on that beam. I didn't have good balance.
I know if you do a playground now, there's all kinds of federal is there a
there's no certification as far as testing or making sure the screws are bolted in correctly, but that's something that, for lack of a better term, is common sense. We can have somebody go around and make sure things are tight.
This is a prefab thing, right?
Correct.
Everything
comes in a full package.
You ever have any problems with people getting hurt on it?
Just like with anything at a public facility,
if you or I used it,
we probably would, right?
Call the ambulance.
The defibrillator would be attached to the side for you, Bob.
The good thing about this type of setup is it's been used worldwide, and there are Vita trails and lots of different names for these trails, all over. So the types of setups have been tested over and over and over and refined. So there's no particular problem, although my granddaughter could jump up in there and bounce around, play around, and fall out and bop her head, or I could fall off doing something.
Yeah.
Those kinds of things. But this is a really long-standing setup that's been used in thousands and thousands of places in the country.
Yeah, the school in Charlottesville, I had one, but it wasn't as large.
That's what I was wondering about the liability. Mm-hmm. So do you want a motion?
Yes, sir.
I move to accept the
attempt. Oh, sorry, Mr. Weaver. I'm sorry. Can you please use that motion?
Okay.
We put some fiscal
years. A little bit of extra detail.
Yep.
Madam Chair, I move that the Board of Supervisors approve the supplemental appropriation $10,000 donated from the Fluvanna Heritage Trail Foundation for use towards fitness trail equipment for Pleasant Grove Park in the year 16 Parks and Recreation budget.
Second. All right. We have a motion from Mr. Weaver and second from Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? If not, chair votes aye. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to the Heritage Trail Foundation.
Yes.
Yes. Great gift to the county. And
yes.
We truly appreciate it.
Do we have the Heritage Trail? Somebody here, right?
Was I moved all the
way? Yes. Thank you.
And the next thing is to get the Frisbee golf stuff. So
that would be nice.
Cool. Still here.
All right, the county attorney compensation agreement.
So in this case, we haven't had any formal kind of structured written agreement that has been signed and approved by the board. We've had a listing of here's what the county attorney would do, and we've had a fee schedule with it. But I wanted to make it a little more formalized this year, so I sent a draft one from previous years to our county attorney. They did some work on it, put it together in their package, and as he had mentioned before, the rates would change a little bit this coming fiscal year. But the document now spells out much more clearly and has some state code language in it that makes it easier for our insurers to understand that his capacity as county attorney and the deputy and assistant county attorneys makes them essentially an employee of the county for that purpose, for insurance purposes. And so that's what the purpose of this document is. And Mr. Payne can provide any additional questions about it. I'm sorry, I didn't paginate there, but oh well. Anyway, so that's the two-page document with the fee schedule.
There really isn't any substantial change other than we have increased the hourly rate. The $5,000 a month base rate is the same.
Yeah.
And the duties, the allocation of duties is the same.
So that information will go with the motion then, since that's not actually the motion itself.
We could certainly put those rights in there.
I think you're going to have to pass them together.
And in your package, you'll see that here's what the prior rates were and what the new rates are.
Right.
From prior years to current year. So we'll list this new fee schedule that's here with
yes.
just the news along with that motion when we put it
That'll
in.
That'll go with the motion.
Just in case you're, I want to make sure nobody's mistaken, when you see Christina Guidry there, she was hired about a year ago, and she has been serving as assistant county attorney, but her hourly rate is not increasing. It's staying the same as it has been.
Okay.
I move to approve the county attorney's compensation agreement for services until July 1, 2015.
Second.
Effective.
Effective July 1, 2015.
Yeah.
That was a Freudian slip.
Effective.
All right.
Second.
So we have Mr. Ullenbrook to give us the motion, second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Real estate acquisition, Mr. Nichols.
So this is the called the Crowder Building on Main Street. There are updated motions on here too. We wanted to update this to put some more fiscal language in it, so you've got two motions listed on here versus what was in your package. But the property we're talking about, this is the park we just talked about. The courthouse is down below, but this is the park. On the left side of the building where the Commonwealth's attorney's office is now, that's a rental building. We pay $2,000 a month to rent that building. This document and these agreements would purchase that building and the adjacent properties, the adjacent vacant lots on either side of it. Now, there's still some survey work to be done to finish up on that, but the county attorney has said that the documents are ready to go for your action. Two separate motions.
The contract has been approved by Mr. Crowder. Well, let me just say one other thing.
Yes.
I have to admit this, I don't know whether it's a senior moment or what, but I'd forgotten that we actually conveyed this property to Mr. Crowder some years ago. Mm-hmm. So we're getting it back. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're going to do one motion at a time. Vote on one at a time. All right. Are we ready?
I move to approve the real estate contract of sale to purchase 181 Main Street, Elmira, Virginia. Designated on the tax maps of the County of Fluvanna, Virginia, as tax map parcel 30A-A-20, for the purchase price of $147,900, and authorize the county administrator to execute the contract, subject to approval as to form by the county attorney.
Second.
All right. Moved by Mrs. Sheridan, second by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a supplemental appropriation of $147,900 from unassigned fund balance to the FY16 capital budget for purchase of 181 Main Street, Elmira, Virginia.
Second.
All right. Motion by Mr. Sheridan, second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Next, we have the fiscal year 2015 Davenport case supplemental appropriation. Mr. Tisdale.
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the board. As we discussed in previous budget briefs, it is the end of the fiscal year now, and we do have a shortage in the Davenport line. Currently, the Board of Supervisors professional services line for Davenport case is over budget, $299,257, and we're recommending a supplemental appropriation from the fund balance to cover this.
Okay. Have any questions?
No. The one you have is fine, Mr. Weaver.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move that the Board of Supervisors approve a supplemental appropriation of $299,257 for the year 15 Board of Supervisors professional service budget Davenport case from unassigned fund balance.
Second. All right, it's moved by Mr. Weaver and second by Mr. Ullenbrook. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye.
Thanks.
Thank you. Extension of appointment of members of the Board of Equalization.
Madam Chair, members of the Board, Board of Equalization members were appointed for a six-month period from January 1st through June 30th, 2015. And the reason Mr. Sheridan and I, the Commissioner of Revenue, had talked about it, we thought six months would be plenty of time to cover their work because it was just an administrative reassessment last year. They're done. But when we reviewed that to say, is there anything else we need to do, state code actually says you're to be appointed for 1 year. So this is just coming back to extend their appointment to the end of the calendar year, even though they may not have any more hearings at all. And then in the future, every other year when we do this, when we appoint the members, we'll just appoint them for a full 1 year and just be done with it. We just didn't think we'd need a full year to finish their work because we rarely ever do. But the language in the code says for a year.
Right.
It's the same members. You're just reappointing them to for the remainder of the calendar year.
Right.
I did contact Gary Ellis on that, and he said he would be glad to continue on the board because I had some question maybe whether somebody dropped off or I didn't know about it. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, this is just an appointment of extension of the same folks.
That.
But and again, I'm not sure they're going to have any more hearings.
Okay.
But it's to clear up some of the legislative details.
Madam Chair, I move to extend the appointment of Gary Ellis, Everett M. Hanna, and Joseph P. Nolan as the regular. How do you pronounce that?
Rodman, sir.
Rodman, excuse me. And regular members, and Karen Burkhoff as an alternate member of the Board of Equalization for Real Estate Assessments until December 31st, 2015, per Virginia Code Section 58.1-3370, and further move to retain Joanne Rawls as Administrator Assistant to the Board of Equalization.
Second. All right, motion by Mr. Weaver and second by Mr. Hollenbrook. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Appointment to Region 10 Community Services Board.
Yes, ma'am. We have one candidate for that vacant position. Dr. Jerry Swigert is interested in serving on the Region 10 Community Services Board, replacing Dr. Ross.
Okay.
I move to appoint Dr. Jerry Swigert to the Region 10 Community Services Board, replacing Dr. Pamela Ross with the term to begin immediately and terminate June 30th, 2016.
Okay.
A major second.
All right. We have a motion by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Ollenbrook. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye.
And thank Dr. Ross.
Now we have our presentations. PVC Annual Update. Dr. Frank Feisman, President of PVCC.
Well, thank you, board members.
Yes,
thank you,
sir,
for the opportunity to bring you a brief update. I'll try to do it quickly, and I'll try to do three things. Give you a look at enrollment, especially Fluvanna County citizens. A couple of highlights from the year we've concluded, a couple of coming attractions for next year, and then take any questions you might have. This past year, we had 7,800 students over the course of the year, 879 from Fluvanna County. That means 11% of our enrollment is from your county. Interestingly, of that 879, 386, almost half, took at least one of our courses over the internet. Mm-hmm. They might have taken a bunch of other courses, but they took at least one via the internet, and that's, you know, it's just becoming more and more popular. People are so busy. It's a great way to get a course added to whatever else you're doing in your life. Also, you continue to send us the largest percentage of your high school graduates of the seven jurisdictions we serve. Last year, 91 of your graduates, which is right about 30% of your high school graduates, came to us the fall immediately after graduation. So that's a wonderful part of our partnership. And one other thing, of course, our dual enrollment partnership continues to flourish. 178 Fluvanna County High School students took dual enrollment classes from us. And as you know, they don't have to pay for those classes. They earn those college credits. You should certainly be very proud. Their family saved $150,000 in tuition last year alone.
That's great.
Yeah, it's a wonderful
really
partnership.
It is.
Yeah.
18 credits.
Before I go on to highlights, I neglected to introduce somebody because he doesn't need an introduction. You all know Frank Gallo. Frank is your representative on our board. He has finished 1 year. And in that year has already become an extremely active and contributing board member and one of the leaders of the board. So you're very well represented on our board, and thank you for that appointment. Couple of quick highlights from the past year. I'm going to go kind of in reverse order. One of the highlights is actually something we've done in partnership with your Parks and Rec department. We run a summer program now for kids, grades 3 through 9. We started about 3 years ago or so. Academic type camps, a lot of science and technology, some arts, those kinds of things. This summer, we have 1,200 kids enrolled in those programs. For the first time, though, we've started taking them off campus. And the first 2 weeks in June, we ran a program here in Fluvanna. We had 100 kids signed up for that. They did a lot of 3D printer work and things like that. And it was a great partnership with your Parks and Rec department. And we'll probably be expanding that next year. It's been so successful. Going backwards a little bit, we had our largest graduating class ever at the college. We gave out 840 awards, graduation awards, certificates, degrees, to 680 students, meaning some of them earned more than one at a time. Interestingly, about 60% of our student graduates are transferring on, pursuing a bachelor's degree. About 40% are in programs that lead to immediate employment, with the largest still being in healthcare. That's our biggest immediate employment areas. We also entered into a program with the city of Charlottesville that you might be interested in. They call it Growing Opportunities. They're looking at trying to get folks who have been unemployed, living in poverty, give them a jump start, get them some skill training, and get them into an entry-level job. So we partnered with the city, and we've run some short-term training programs, and we've graduated 32 people. They've gotten jobs as bus drivers, as certified nurse assistants, and administrative assistants. And it's been a really good program. City of Charlottesville fortunately had some funding to help make that possible for us. A couple of things just to mention that we've won some awards for, and we're very proud of. Just this past month, the National Science Foundation runs a program they call the Innovative Challenge for Community Colleges. Teams of community college students get to present to the National Science Foundation solutions to real world problems. And it's interesting, our students were involved in something you were just looking at with StreamWatch and looking at the health of freshwater sustainability, and they had a new way to measure the health of freshwater. And they came up with it with one of our biology faculty, and they were named one of the top 10 in the nation in terms of coming up with this new innovative approach. Really quite an accomplishment for those students. Moving on to next year. Oh, one other thing I wanted to cite. As you know, one of the criticisms we often get, all of us in higher education, from businesses, is that students come out with degrees, but they just can't write well enough. We hear that from businesses all the time. We implemented 5 years ago a program to improve student writing, where we not only taught writing in our typical English courses, but every single major had to embed intensive writing courses in the major. So if you were majoring in marketing, you had to have a marketing course with a lot of writing, and it was team taught with an English faculty. We just won an award, a state award, as the best practices in teaching among community colleges for that intensive writing program. So we're pleased with that. Quick look at next year. We'll launch 5 new programs, all geared towards getting people into the job market quickly. All short-term, 2 semesters or 1 year, nothing longer than that, to get people jobs right away in this economy. The first 2 are in healthcare. One is central services technician. We actually just started that this summer with a small group. This is a program that UVA Hospital and Martha Jefferson Hospital came to us and asked us to start because they need these people to work in the hospitals. They're the folks who do the sterilization of instruments, operating rooms, those kinds of things. It's a quick 21-credit, 6-month program. The jobs are waiting there. The hospitals are funding the program for us. They need the employees so badly. The second one is same situation, pharmacy technician. UVA Hospital is expanding their pharmacy. They need pharmacy techs. They're helping us financially to start the program. 29 credits, one-year program. The jobs are just waiting there. We're also starting up a one-year program in cybersecurity. We all hear about the breaches of data all the time. This is probably the fastest growing field in IT right now, and we'll be offering industry certifications in the various elements of cybersecurity. We'll start that in the fall. We'll start retail management in the fall, which is, we'll get a national certification from the National Retail Federation, and we'll do a construction management program in the fall, trying to take folks who are already working in construction but are ready to move up into the management and supervision area. We'll layer that on top of their skill set, whatever it might be, to move them into management. All short-term training programs. Last thing for next year, we're once again pursuing funding for our Student Success Center. We're moving up on the priority list of higher education. We're number 12 right now. And if the governor and the General Assembly see fit to put some money into some construction projects, we'll be lining up, ready to build that Student Success Center on campus. And with that, I'll stop and see if you have any questions or comments or even complaints that I could answer.
Any questions?
Let me keep that part. And I've got materials for you, some bedtime reading for you. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Please.
You say you have more students going on the internet. And now, how is that working, and what is the cost of that? How does that compare?
Same cost. Yeah, the classes.
How much credit?
What we've done is taken, you know, a typical 3-credit class, and a faculty member has converted it to an internet-based course. It's the same outcomes. I mean, that's one of the requirements. Okay. If it's a, you know, a psychology course, you get the same learning outcomes whether you're face-to-face with a teacher or on the internet. Many of those courses do the same exams, even, to make sure of that. Same 3 credits, same cost.
Okay, I think
that's... Liberty's made of...
Yes, they are one of the national leaders in terms of doing that.
In internet education.
Yeah.
How are your transfer of students to the UVA? How does that compare to...
The program with UVA is really a nationally recognized program. We send more transfer students to UVA than any other college anywhere. Averages about 150 or so each year. They only take maybe 300, 350, you know, worldwide in transfers, and the 150 are from us. We follow up on the students with their research office. We do it jointly. Graduation rate of our transfers is around 90 or 91%. Average GPA at graduation in the UVA courses is about a 3.1 or 3.2, right in there. Those statistics are basically the same as their freshmen. So they do great. And the partnership with UVA in the last decade has been written up twice in the Wall Street Journal as a model partnership between a community college and a prestigious university. And we're very proud of that relationship.
Is that partnership? I mean, of course, it applies to the other state schools as well, too. What are the transfer rates into the other state schools? Do you follow those as well, William and Mary?
Yeah, I'll do my best. We transfer about 700 students a year nationwide. 2/3 in-state, 1/3 out-of-state, approximately. The biggest in-state transfers are, of course, UVA, followed by JMU, VCU, Old Dominion and Mary Baldwin, because they offer programs right on our campus. You can earn your bachelor's degree without ever leaving our campus from ODU and Mary Baldwin. So they get a lot of our adult students who can't go off to college somewhere. They're tied here due to jobs and family. So those are probably the biggest transfer institutions. In a typical year, our students transfer to colleges around, you know, 20 or 30 states in our nation. You know, one here, two there, and it's always nice to see some of our students getting into MIT and Harvard and Stanford. I mean, some of the most prestigious universities, and we usually have one or two getting into each of those each year.
And how many states offer sort of that pathway from community college directly?
Most of them do now.
They do.
Yeah, most of the states have adopted the community college model. I think Virginia has done it maybe better than a good number of them. You know, we have those guaranteed admission agreements so that if a student takes our transfer courses, graduates, and earns a certain GPA, which is set by the university, you're guaranteed admission. They can't tell you, oh, we've hit our quota, we won't take you. You're guaranteed. We have that with every public university in the state, and Virginia has really done that well.
Do you track the students when they enter PVCC, and do they fin? Do you know how many of them actually get a associate degree or actually finish?
Yeah, we track that. It's a complicated issue, mm-hmm. because, as you know, many of the students who come to us, they don't want a degree. They want a couple of courses. They want to skill up in an area. I mean, I was a student there. I didn't need a degree. I was just taking a couple of things I was interested in. Yeah. So it becomes a difficult mm-hmm. thing to measure and explain.
Right.
But approximately half mm-hmm. of our students will either graduate or transfer.
Okay.
Because a lot of our students transfer before they graduate. They're a couple credits short, or some transfer after just 1 year. So about half either graduate or transfer. Mm-hmm. One of our goals is to get that up to about 60%.
Okay.
We feel if we can reach that, that would really put us in an elite category mm-hmm. among community colleges nationally.
Yes.
And that's always our goal.
Because I know the high school has they have a hard time tracking to know what.
Yeah, you know, we track, but right now 15% of our students enter, they already have a bachelor's mm-hmm. degree or higher.
Right.
Most of our students in our healthcare programs, they already have degrees. They're going into nursing mm-hmm. or a field like that because the job market is so good, and their degree might be in a field where, you know, it doesn't lead to that kind of money-making ability. So about 15% of our students, that means about 750 students a year already have degrees. They're not, you know, mm-hmm. so it. We have to measure it that way.
Right. Okay. Thank you so much.
I have one more.
Yes.
Will you get more students from Sweetbriar College now, maybe? Or how is that? How's that working out?
I better not touch that one. No, we did not do anything overt to reach out to those students. From what I gather, many of the private institutions in Virginia did reach out to those students mm-hmm. to see if they wanted to transfer. We did not. And now that things have changed there with it remaining open, your guess is as good as mine what's going to happen in terms of those students.
Thank you all very much.
Take care.
And thank you, Mr. Gallo, for representing us. Thank you. All right. We have VDOT Bridge, and you need to get to the ceremony.
In a minute. It's just
been. Oh, is that right?
Yes.
That book.
Okay. There's a formal procedure for naming bridges. It's outlined by VDOT. One of the things we'll have to do is submit a formal resolution from the local government side, and we'll send that on to Joel D'Annunzio and his staff to take care of. In the resolution, you have to indicate the local jurisdiction will pay for the cost of the sign, and if there's anything that's you look puzzled, Mister.
Who are we naming a bridge for?
This is coming from a citizen.
No, not hardware. Who are we naming it?
Someone submitted someone. I don't know if you were here. Came in and suggested.
Yeah. You were not.
You were out that week.
Right.
You were out.
Temperance. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Temperance Bridge.
Let me
jump ahead then. Okay. We had a citizen request to name the bridge. Mr. George Cushing addressed the board on June 3rd with a request to name the Route 6 bridge over the Hardware River. Mr. Cushing suggested the name Temperance Bridge in honor of the former historical Temperance Bridge named by General John Hartwell Cock, who was, of course, an associate of Thomas Jefferson, and who was an activist in the temperance movement. So that's where this came from. So this is a picture picture of the old Temperance Bridge, and so this is what it looked like, and you can see they put the bridge they're tearing down now was actually in service in this picture, so they'd just gotten that in service and changed the road.
But that's the old bridge is where the new one sits.
Yep. So, anyway, let's go on back to where we were. Anyway, what we'll have to do is do a resolution. There'll be, and of course, a memorandum, and then we'll have to use the traffic engineering division stuff to figure out how we're going to do this as far as our wording and the signage and that kind of thing. And then VDOT actually comes in and tells us whether or not that's going to work and puts in the display details and all that. And then the maintenance division will review the request, prepare all the documents for the Commonwealth Transportation Board. So in a nutshell, these are the action steps. BOS passes the resolution agreeing to pay all the associated installation costs. VDOT prepares the documents for the Commonwealth Transportation approval. If the CTB approves the sign, VDOT will install the signs and bill the county for the cost of the installation.
And so, ballpark, we're thinking the low thousands. We're getting a price estimate back from them, but 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, that range?
Yeah. For the sign? The name?
Pardon?
For the signs?
For signage, yes. VDOT signs are not cheap in any shape or form, but we don't know for sure. You haven't gotten the number back yet.
No, they haven't given me a number back.
We're waiting on.
Mr. Glass is working on that, actually. So we have a couple options, not to pursue any formal naming. We don't have to name the bridge at all. Maybe pursue formal naming under Temperance Bridge as suggested by Mr. Cushney, or we can seek naming suggestions from the public. And like I said, VDOT is now creating that cost estimate, so we should have some numbers to give you here, hopefully in the next couple of weeks. If there's any other questions.
Any questions?
No.
All right. Thank you.
All right. And what is the board's pleasure? Would you like us to
sit
on for now?
Yeah. Wait to hear.
Yeah.
But I do think in the last meeting we said we were going to seek suggestions for names or not?
Yeah, I think
well,
that, I
that's what
do.
This presentation is for. Is what you want to do.
Yeah.
Or do nothing. But,
right.
Seems like it should have a name.
I think the idea was that it was
women's temperance.
A recognition of the history of Rhode Island County.
I think as much as we can recognize the history and symbol.
I personally would like to start recognizing some people that over the last 50 years in Fort Mac County.
What was that, Bob?
Recognizing current people, you know, in our lifetime.
Oh. Now,
in our lifetime, except for you.
You're you know, 50 years.
In our current lifetime, there's some. I have like a name in my head, but you know, rather than before someone dies and they're dead and they never have a clue that you honored them, you know, I'd like to somewhere, somehow, and I talked about this 4 years ago. Recognize some folks that have been around for a long time that, you know, are alive still. Mm-hmm. I'd rather have something named after me while I'm alive.
You talked about the $150,000 bath.
Yeah, we don't put that.
The Ollenbrook bridge would be a lot more expensive because it's a long name.
$150,000
a little. Yeah. I mean, I'm all for Camarade Bridge, too.
And I know that we have, in the past, may put plaques on buildings for supervisors who...
Can we put one on the bathroom door?
...have left
Speaking of names, just to add to the mix, one of the things that I may come to you and ask about is, once we move folks out of the two small clerks buildings alongside the historic courthouse, I'd like to have them named, just so we're referring to those, when someone wants to check out the key for that meeting there, we could say that's the Ollenbrock room or the Jones room or the Civil War room or whatever. But
now let's put that on hold for now.
It gets expensive in trying to do bridges.
We can have some discussions.
Well, and you know, one of the advantages of Temperance Bridge and you know, kind of promoting Cock and
well, I just had that discussion.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying that's one of the, exactly one of the advantages of promoting that is that it allows us to you know look towards making Fluvanna kind of a tourist destination as part of that whole trail. So,
I know, but that name came up in my conversation,
which is why
I'm bringing it back up. That even though I appreciate the idea of current people, in this case, Fluvanna can work towards building the lore, if you would,
building a bridge,
the
people.
You know, this important person who participated. You know, people come to visit Fluvanna. We come to visit Monticello because of Thomas Jefferson. The lore of Thomas Jefferson, the great deeds of Thomas Jefferson are well recognized, and here was one of his contemporaries that was you know right there side by side with him in many of the moments and many of the architectures and you know we can promote that in Fluvanna. We should promote that in Fluvanna.
Sure.
As part of agritourism and agritourism and you
know
especially. So,
yeah.
I mean, I like you know, the fact that you can, you know, at some day, maybe sometime in the future, Bremo Bluff will become a place that people will come and visit.
Right.
You know,
stay overnight, maybe.
Maybe. Maybe. We were, his ancestor, I mean, his descendant was very kind to invite us in during the last FLDP tour that
yes,
we went on.
That was nice.
That was really quite impressive to be able to
see
Bremo Bluff and to learn more about. You know, the old courthouse and his impact in the area. And so Temperance Bridge is just one of those other ones.
Do you like that name, Temperance Bridge?
Well, I think it's a recognition of, again, promoting that lore. That's my personal opinion. And Mr. Cushney and I believe the Historical Society also mentioned that. And I just think that it's a way that we can highlight, you know, the impact of this individual in this area and as a contemporary of Mr. Jefferson. So.
Right.
But you know, if we decide to proceed and allocate the funds and go towards seeking out names, and you know that will fall on its own. That's just my own personal opinion.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I don't need any more work to do, but theoretically, you could, again, quick, easy survey that it's anonymous. We can ask the community for names of historical things, places, people, or current events that we think are important, and you could have a list of 20 things that people in the community suggested. So that if you decide to want to name a room or one of those buildings or a bridge, you've kind of got a preset list that it's good for a couple of years at least.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not suggesting you do that. I'm just saying that you could if you want to gather some community input. This is not without cost, especially from the bridge perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I suggest we put it on hold for a month or so.
I think we need some input from the community.
Yeah.
Okay, so are we going to ask
staff? While we got the Fluvanna review here, we can go ahead and ask.
It's only 32 pages long. How many more suggestions?
Okay, so we are going to...
and we got the Fluvanna review here,
too. You're 2 cents worth.
Mm-hmm. Two cents worth.
Forgive me.
All right. Are we clear, Mr. Nichols, are
so
you clear?
I'll do a good kind of formal survey out there sometime so we can gather some input.
Yeah, that's good. Get some done.
I love the community involved. All right, now we have our consent agenda. Would you like to pull anything?
I just want to sort of highlight several things here.
Okay.
VW and X. Yeah. First of all, I want to jump down to the cell tower budget.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about another $22,000 there.
That's not spending, Mr. Weaver.
Okay.
All that is straight in, straight out.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah.
Because you get certain money for those permits.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's just a pass through.
That's the reason I asked this first before I'm into some of my other.
What they normally do is they budget for 2 cell towers a year because you don't know how many you're going to get.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Every time a cell tower comes in, it costs $4,000 to have the site evaluated or whatever.
Sure.
They pay us, we pay the people.
Winter.
So it's an in and out. We had 8 this year.
Yeah.
So therefore, we have $22,000.
Yeah, it didn't say that in the synopsis.
Yeah, it probably wasn't.
No, but that's, I'd recall that we got some money and I didn't know whether that was a pass-through or not.
It is.
And it is a pass-through. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's not new money.
We'll try to update that because that makes sense. It would make it easier.
What?
We'll try to just update that next time when we do that. All this is just accounting in our budget for the dollars, but we could have made that more clear. It's fine.
Okay, then we go back to CSA. And certainly I'm familiar with that over the years. We're talking about another $175,000. And I understand the state what pays two-thirds of that. I mean, not of that, but the whole total amount of.
Well, it's actually $386,000.
300, right. But our part would be $175.
Yes, sir.
And I guess I just get disturbed. Here we come down to Fork Union Streetscape, $10,000 there. So there you have $185,000 that we hadn't anticipated. And I'm certainly glad to find out that to verify that the $22,000 was a pass-through. And it just, you know, after a while, you just wonder where we're going and all. That bothers me.
Well, I think one, you know, the numbers are what the numbers are,
yes,
as far as the cost is. You know, I'm not going to even try to say anything to try to explain it any other way. One of the things I'm very encouraged about the FY16 budget is that the local Medicaid share has been built into the budget, which it never was before. The reduction in aid to localities is always taken from CSA, and it affects various departments. The vote is always taken to just take the chunk out of CSA, and it comes up every year and has for, I'm going to say, maybe 10 years that you take it away from CSA on one end and then you have to end up put it back on the other end. Sure. So it's just something we get our vicious cycle we get ourselves caught up in. I do think the Medicaid money for the local Medicaid share, the fact that it's been built into the budget, is going to be something that is going to help next year because we're being planful. And there's a lot in CSA you just can't plan for. We have a lot of day placements and we've had residential placements the last 2 months, and kids come into foster care. It's just been constant. And so, I have six files on my desk of kids coming into foster care. And there's no way to predict that.
How many did you have leave for the year?
We have had some people leave foster care, but we have, and we got down to about three, and we have at least like four that are definitely foster care, and then we have foster care prevention that will never become foster care, but we have a couple that are pretty iffy that they probably will, and the courts will make that decision.
With regard to the Medicaid component, the county's portion of the Medicaid component, and that being built in particular with aging seniors moving towards, you know, using Medicaid, what kind of an impact is that for local dollars?
The seniors.
These are children.
Yeah, these are children.
Is there any? No, just not CSA. I'm just talking about social services in general.
Oh, I don't know anything about that. I'm just going to tell you right now. I work with kids. Kids are my thing. So I can tell you about Medicaid, but Medicare, I don't know anything about
it.
Medicaid for children is, we always try to get Medicaid funding so we don't use, you know, that we're not using more local dollars. It offsets the CSA dollars. But it's Medicaid is not free. You do have a local percentage. And not this year, but the year before, our local Medicaid share, even though it would have been a lot higher what we were paying if we didn't have these kids covered by Medicaid, it still was $113,000. So we're talking about a chunk of change. And so this year it's been, you know, as I said, for next year in the budget, it's been built in.
If you're asking, has there been a huge growth?
Well, you brought that up earlier, and so I'm just wondering, and it's something, and I apologize, I forgot you were with Child Services there. And so maybe a better question for, you know, Ms. Mabee.
Yeah, and I'm not very political either. Right. My husband is, but I'm not. So
no,
I don't keep up on these things.
I'm political. just the question is really, are we, as a county, because, you know, as you have more seniors aging and as they run out of money for care, they will turn to Medicaid. I mean, that is what's left. And so really what I'm trying to ask is, you know, what kind of an impact are we going to have on the county? to be answered right now, but...
We do see a trend, and this is over, you know, you get these a little bit more each year. There is a trend to be more conservative with Medicaid dollars. I mean, Medicaid used to fund a lot of things they don't fund anymore, or they're more stringent in their review of cases before they fund. So we do see that trend coming.
Which that, in the long run, though, is good for the taxpayer. Is that true? I mean, you want to make sure that it's deserving and not just superficially.
It's still growing.
Yeah,
it's still astronomical numbers.
The problem is seniors run out of money, and once they run out of money, unless their family's taking care of them, then they're
nursing home is like, you know, in order to be in a nursing home, they have to be on Medicaid.
I don't think they'd be Medicaid eligible if they're Medicare eligible.
They're Medicare.
That's
over 65.
Right, you're Medicare eligible, but you can become. You have to understand that Medicare doesn't cover nursing care costs unless you've had an event that qualifies for that, right? And so in the case of Medicaid, and in particular in the case of the daily activities of living, there's three things or five things that qualify for the daily activities of living. If you need extra care because you can't dress, bathe, feed yourself, et cetera, you know, if you're under Medicare, that's not covered. You have to pay for that separately. If you're under Medicaid, that is covered, okay, and they take care of that. So you're going to have an increase of senior citizens using Medicaid services. And the question is, how much is that going to cost?
I don't understand any of this, Steve. I only understand about kids. Kids and dogs.
I appreciate that. I'm not asking you specifically. I'm just bringing that up as a trend that we're likely to see.
Sure. Right.
You know, in the sense that our local share of that cost is going to go up over the years. That's all I'm saying. That's my only point.
We're living too long.
Well, we're living too long and we're running out of money, yeah.
Right.
We're living too long, we're not saving enough money, and we're having less kids, which means that, you know, the burden's passed on to fewer.
Well, that has just changed, you know, recently, like 0.1%. There are more births now than
I heard that on the news.
Just has changed.
Just changed.
Yes.
Speaking of that, we added to it yesterday.
Indeed.
That's right.
Mel had another grandson.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Another male shirt. Imagine that.
Right,
another
shirt. Did you have any other questions?
No.
All right, let me go through the list. I failed to recognize it. The consent agenda consists of minutes of June 3rd, 2015, minutes of June 17th, 2015, fiscal year's CSA Purchase of Services Budget Supplement, Fiscal Year BOS Contingency Budget Transfer for Fulton Streetscape, and the Cell Tower Budget. And then it was the Fiscal Year 15 Surplus Property Sale Appropriation for the Fire Department. Then we had Fiscal Year 15 Department of Social Service Budget Transfer, and then Fiscal Year 15 Middle School HVAC Supplemental Appropriation. So those were the things on the consent item, and Mr. Weaver brought up three of those, which we have discussed. So are we ready to vote now?
I so make that motion.
All right, thank you.
Second. Beat you.
Okay. It has been moved by Mr. Weaver that we accept the consent agenda, and second by Mr. Ollenbrook. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, if not, your chair votes aye.
One note, we on a lot of the slides, you've seen that the fund balance up in the corner. What we did is just ran all these things that you had on your agenda tonight. We ran them against the fund balance dollars, so you'd see where we're at the end of fiscal year 15, and then the other items you approved tonight, and where we'd be. We also have some additional revenue because the tax rates went up. The second half billings will add about $400,000. Plus, Mr. Sheridan will be reporting on some public utilities increases because the rate came at 100%. So we should have another $40,000 or $50,000 from that too. So those figures still have to be finalized, you know, a couple months into this fiscal year. But that's where you'll end up after these items. Now, the FSPCA, the only reason I put that on is because on your July 15th agenda, Public Works will be presenting some potential facility requirements for the pound services that we get from the FSPCA. We talked about that last meeting. and I'm not sure what those dollars are. I just put it on there as a placeholder of $100,000 because I had mentioned that before of the cost to maintain and upgrade the facility so that it meets state requirements for pound services. So anyway, that's an update on fund balance dollars. And then the other thing that to keep in mind is sometime in the next few weeks, you're going to be hearing about unexpended dollars that are that are either within budget dollars or in excess of budget dollars from both the school system and from social services.
FY15
dollars, right? Mm-hmm. But you'll be hearing in the coming weeks because we don't close out the books, and so once the books get officially closed out in August sometime. September, okay.
Now the FSPCA, $100,000 or thereabouts, is that state required that we fund it?
That is a scientific wild guess. We don't know the number yet, but I put that there as a placeholder because, for instance, there are some runs inside that need certain types of flooring and screening. If it's required for pound dogs to be able to use that stuff, then it has to meet state standards. Same with some outside runs, same with septic system and things.
But is that the responsibility of the county?
What we're going to come to you with is the layout of the things that need to be done and then a breakout of what we think is county supported and not county supported. So I don't know what the dollars will be, but it could be substantial, but it may not be all county expected dollars. I just want to make sure you get it on the plate and we can see it.
Not county supported might be what, as an example?
Well, let's say we have 10 runs all the time for pound dogs, and let's say there's 40 runs. Well, we don't necessarily have to have all of them to the standards. But depending on where our dogs go, not dogs, our pets go, our animals go in the pound, any place they have to be seen, treated, worked, stored, sheltered, cared for may require our support to make it state code acceptable for pound services. It may also benefit the FSPCA if we fixed A, but it's required for us to do it. There are many other things that may not be, I'm sorry, Fred, go ahead.
Mr. Allmark, I think the answer to your question is to the extent that the statute mandates that we provide pound services for a certain class of animals or classes of animals, then we are responsible for doing that. We do it through this contract.
We do it through a contract.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
And we contract to a nonprofit, which is FSPCA.
In this case, we do.
That's correct.
Yes.
So we're already paying a rather huge amount of money in that contract.
The contract calls for you to provide that maintenance in addition to the cost we pay.
To provide maintenance above and beyond the contract.
Yes.
That's I guess is my question.
It does. That's what the contract language
we're
is.
We're basically building, we're paying for them to take care of our animals.
If we try to do it on our
You're paying them as an operator, you're not paying them as
we're paying a contract.
Yeah, but you're not paying them as a facility.
But we're supplying the facility in which
right. It would be more
no, we're not supplying the facility. Yeah, we're not supplying we're supplying part of the maintenance.
And that part of the maintenance
is specified in the contract.
It will be much cheaper than trying to build one.
Oh, we went through that 4 years.
Exponentially cheaper. But when we renegotiate the contract again, we can renegotiate such that you have to maintain the facility such that it meets state code, blah, blah, blah. That just means that the dollar cost of the contract would certainly be much higher on the front end than the basic cost, and you know, there's six one half dozen the other on which way you do it. But that's the current terms of the contract.
Are you satisfied with the current operation?
I'll brief you later on. I've got a package here for you.
Okay. Do we? We have one thing on. We have some unfinished business, and we have. Mr. Steve Jason is going to, and Fred will chime in to have you on here too, Fred. You know that, right? Okay.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. And you have this at your table. That was put on your
I've seen desk. Jason and Fred.
This is at
your
table.
Yes, ma'am.
Everybody. Okay.
Madam Chairman, one thing Before you get started, I will tell you that, and that is that I understood this was to be a general discussion, a general topic, not a discussion of specific cases.
Okay.
If you want to talk about specific cases, we'd be glad to do that, but I would strongly recommend you do that in closed session.
All right.
Because that involves a lot of legal issues.
This is generic.
Okay.
As long as it's generic, I don't have a problem.
Right. Okay. Well, you'll stop if anything is off.
Leap up and scream.
Okay.
Madam Chairman, members of the board, I'm here to talk about approved roads and subdivisions. As you recall, a few months ago, we discussed the same topic. I just wanted to come back before you to bring some additional clarity to some items and also to give you a few updates on some things staff's working on. An overview. As you recall, in the last discussion, under provisions of the zoning and subdivision ordinance, all major subdivisions require roads to be taken into the VDOT system. That's found in two sections of our code, one in the subdivision ordinance and one in zoning ordinance. As far as the county's role, there's some key points I want to clarify. Roads dedicated to public use by a final plat are held by the county until ready to be taken into the VDOT system. And two, the county has no obligation to pay for the completion of the roads and cannot be compelled to do so. That's found in Virginia Code Section 152-2268. And that leaves the developer and the homeowners bearing the responsibility of getting the streets taken into the state system.
Yeah.
And again, we discussed the problems during the last brief. Mainly those problems seem to stem from the housing crisis. Developers went bankrupt. Some subdivisions were left with little or no bond money left to improve the roads. And as a result, VDOT won't plow or maintain the roads, and school buses can't enter the street to pick up children on the roads that haven't been taken into the system. Again, as we discussed last time, options for the county are limited, but we can pull the bond if it's available to bring the remaining roads into the system. Also, we can withhold building permits and certificate of occupancies until the subdivision is brought into the system. That's due to it being a zoning and subdivision ordinance violation. And also, the Board of Supervisors does reserve the right to vacate the remaining undeveloped lots on the approved plat. But that, again, that is no help to the existing subdivision homeowners. Some research by staff has we found two subdivisions in the county that do not have road bonds. One is Cunningham Meadows, as a subdivision was approved in 2007 with 30 lots. VDOT has noted several deficiencies, but again, no bond is available. And Taylor Ridge, subdivision was approved in 2002 with 53 lots. VDOT has been out there and developed a punch list as well, but again, no bond is available. And this is just a location map of those two subdivisions.
Do you have those punch lists and the numbers that go with them?
That's one of the things we're compiling, and we do have that data from VDOT on many of these subdivisions.
Okay. Can you go back about three with the codes?
I think sure.
It's three. Right there. The county has no obligation to pay for completion of roads and cannot be compelled to do so. That leads me to believe that if we chose as a board to bring X road up to code, that we could do that. There's nothing that prevents us from doing it.
Well, that's not entirely clear to me. I believe that to be the case. The original Byrd Act, which created the secondary highway system, did exactly what you just said. It prohibited the county from spending any money on roads. There have been two amendments to it relatively recently in the last 10 years or so, one of which allowed counties under some limited circumstances to spend money on VDOT roads, and the other which appears to allow the county to spend money on roads that are not in the system but are proposed to be in the system.
Mm-hmm.
Before anybody gets off on
I don't want to go
before anybody gets off on Henrico and Arlington counties, that this doesn't take into account this whole concept of devolution. there are two counties that do maintain their own roads. Flavanna is not one of those. So we have no general authority to maintain roads.
Is there a way we can get a definitive answer on?
Well, I think that's what the language of it says. Given that what the Supreme Court did this, the United States Supreme Court did this week, that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but it appears to say that we could, if we wanted to. It's a fairly involved statute, and there's some pretty technical things. I'm sorry I didn't bring it with me. I had it on my desk to bring with me. No, I forgot to bring it.
It's not anything we're doing tonight.
But I anticipated that question, and I had it copied off and just forgot to bring it. But I think it's likely that the county could spend that money if it wanted to.
It would seem that if the county was going to do something like that, that it would do so in some sort of a matching form. I mean, that's,
it would have to be a discussion we had.
Yeah.
But I'm getting to the point where just to make it real fast, of no fault of their own, a lot of our citizens are in a bad spot. And if I got 6 months left, if there's anything I can do in the next 6 months to benefit the residents of this county in some way, form, or shape, I'm going to do it. And this is just one of those little things.
Madam Chairman, can I make a
couple
of comments?
Otherwise, the bridge will never be
that. Well, in the nature of clarification. First of all, it's number three, where it says the developer and the homeowners bear the responsibility. That's sort of that's a very practical statement. And I could conceive of circumstances where if the homeowners wanted it brought in, they would have to spend it. The law is that it's up to the developer. Mm-hmm. And I just noticed today, I reread a statute that I've only read 3,000 times before, and noticed one very interesting phrase in it. And that is the subdivider or developer. So they're not the same thing. So number three, that's a correct statement, but it's sort of the absolute last ditch statement. If a developer remains, it's the developer's responsibility. Could you move up to the next slide?
Let me ask a question, a legal question. Developer.
If you let us finish the slide brief, because it may answer the question, because we won't be able to get through it if we don't cover the basic core of it. That's my recommendation.
The other thing that with number four, where some subdivisions have no bonds, there is there's a statute that covers this and bonding of subdivision streets. Like a lot of other things in the code, it used to be a lot simpler than it is. It's now pretty much convoluted, but there are two basic ways that subdivision streets are secured. I'll use that word, secured at the time of the subdivision approval. And when I say subdivision approval, I'm talking about signature of the final plat so that it can be recorded. That's the bright line point at which the subdivision comes really as reality. One is that, as A says, the developer may have originally agreed to build the roads. Actually, the first way to do it is the developer has built the roads. The roads are completed at the time the subdivision is approved. Now, that is one way to do it, always has been one way to do it. In my experience, it's very rare. And the reason is because the developers typically don't want to spend, well, there are two reasons. First of all, the developer doesn't want to spend the money up front to finish the road before he can start building it. The bonds can be used, they can be coupled with financing so they don't have to spend it all up in cash up front. So typically, the other method is used, but that's one reason, because it costs more up front for the developer, so most of them don't do that. The second thing is, once the road is built, roads are like, and Mr. Stevens is probably here, and I'm sure he'd agree with me when I say, when you build anything like any kind of infrastructure, road or anything else, the minute you get finished with it, it starts deteriorating. So when you can come in and have the most beautifully completed road in the world, and unless VDOT takes it over virtually immediately, there's going to be need for maintenance and ongoing improvement and things like that. Now, that's particularly significant in the case of a public subdivision street. And the reason for that is that VDOT has a standard where it will not take over the road, regardless of its condition. It will not take over the road until there are three occupied houses per mile on it. So if you have a 20-lot subdivision with the most beautiful road in the world, but nobody lives there yet, VDOT will not take it over.
Then it deteriorates.
The second thing is that VDOT will require, as part of their process, posting of a maintenance bond for a year. So when VDOT takes it over, makes it official, takes it over, the developer is still on, still on the hook for maintenance for a year. So if you have a big storm, washes out a ditch or something like that, he has to come back in and fix it. I was thinking there was something else, but maybe that's it. But that's the outline of where we are on these things. It is noteworthy that this board, your predecessors on this board, made a decision that all major subdivisions in Fluvanna County must have public roads. When I say public roads, I mean a road that is dedicated to public use, accepted for that purpose, and maintained by VDOT. One thing about there's some questions people don't understand. The process for the subdivision street, the dedication of the road, which is an offer to give, when the dedication of the road is made, it is made by depiction on the subdivision plat. So if you look at a subdivision plat, it'll say somewhere on it, roads are intended to be dedicated to public use. Once that plat is recorded in the clerk's office, that automatically constitutes acceptance. So at the moment the plat is recorded in the clerk's office, the fee simple ownership of the roads vests in the county. It does not vest in VDOT, it vests in the county. Now, I don't want to get too metaphysical on this because we're dancing on the head of a pin here for the differences, but the road belongs to the county. VDOT doesn't have any responsibility for it initially. What happens then is after the road is dedicated and accepted and is owned by the county, then VDOT will take the road over, assuming it meets their standards and whatnot, will take them over for maintenance, and it becomes part of the secondary highway system. But one of the things that you have to do when you approve putting a road, a subdivision street in the system, is you have to guarantee the title to the property to VDOT. So don't worry about whether the county owns it or VDOT owns it. There's a Supreme Court case right on point that says it doesn't make any difference. It's all owned in trust for the benefit of all the citizens of the Commonwealth. But technically, the title is in the county.
Okay. And just some additional updates. As I stated to Mr. Ollenbrook a minute ago, staff is in the process of compiling a database of subdivisions and which streets require to be taken into the VDOT system, and also including the bond amounts remaining, if any. Mr. Lindsay and I have been going through every single file imaginable and trying to decipher documents that are 10, 15, 20 years old, and it's taken more time than I would have liked, but we hope to have something to you all in the next few weeks for your review on that. And also, staff is working with VDOT's land use engineer to develop a punch list. As right now, for Fox Hollow, particularly Country Creek Way, we've been out there. We're waiting on a punch list from VDOT to match with the bond remaining. And also, we're trying to schedule a site walk with VDOT for Needham Village to determine the cost of the work to be done on bringing those roads into compliance. Fortunately, bonds remain on both, but we just need to see how that compares to what's deficient. And on those, we're kind of at the mercy of VDOT's schedule. And there's more to come on that when we get the list, but those are the two we're working on right now.
And the other two that are prominently mentioned are Taylor Ridge and Cunningham Meadows. Taylor Ridge and Cunningham Meadows both have had a punch list for some time.
Right.
Building permits are no longer, building permits are not being issued for
No permits are being
issued. No permits are being issued.
And orders of occupancy.
Right. And I think the question is, if somebody has a building permit already, are they notified?
Yes.
Yes.
I appreciate it. Good
morning. I remember one time we had a map where all the subdivisions were located in Fluvanna County. Okay. Do you know if
we've got that on file? And he's provided that.
I think we've seen that.
Yeah. But we had it in a previous brief for you, and it's in one of the packages.
I remember seeing it. I don't remember seeing it.
It's with the dog ordinance one, I think.
Yeah.
Well, that was barking order. That didn't show all the same subdivisions. This is the one that had about 40 or 50 different subdivisions,
yes,
all around the county.
Right.
That are incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So. Right. And
I'm not sure if we got a map of it, but we had a listing of all
the
homes.
Yeah, I know it would
have
be
a listing right here.
It would be a lot of work to say how many houses in each of them. You'd have to go to every last one of them.
Or how many unoccupied
lots. Oh, you would
lots.
Know those. You would have it in your
lots.
Office. Yeah.
That's relatively easy.
We can certainly include that in any report.
Right. But sometimes I want to drive down the road and see,
One of the things you're going to see if you do that,
mm-hmm,
is that it appears that in some, at least some of these subdivisions, there people have come in and bought more than one lot.
Mm-hmm.
So that you have, let's say you got three lots in a row, and you'll go in there and you'll see a house,
mm-hmm,
and what's obviously a lot on each side of the house, but the owner has decided that he wants to live on more than just that one lot, so he just buys a lot on either side.
Right.
So don't
or he
be
wants it for somebody else.
I'm sorry.
Or he wants it for his children or somebody.
No,
else.
That might happen. But what we're seeing is I don't want a half
space.
Acre lot. I don't want a 2 acre lot. I want a 6 acre lot.
Okay.
Some people just want a bigger yard.
Yeah. There's a lot of historical precedent for that, and we're seeing that happening. I wanted to alert you to that. So if you go down there, it looks like, there's only been five lots sold, and maybe five houses there and 15 lots sold.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's an update. We're, mm-hmm, going to continue to give updates,
yeah,
on these.
You're
going to continue,
right,
to have citizens that are concerned about
sure,
these roads and these subdivisions.
Right.
What do you want to do?
What do you want us to do other than continue to work with
you?
Well, I need numbers. I need to, and we're going to get it, some numbers. Until we have numbers, we don't have.
Well, and just straight policy and information for developers and homeowners in those subdivisions. That, this is the policy of the county thus far.
Well, one thing you're,
you want to do something.
One thing you will be doing in due course is there has been an appeal filed for Mr. Stewart's denial of various permits. It's been filed with you, and it's currently scheduled for your second meeting in July. I have.
Those are occupancy.
I'm sorry?
Occupancy permits.
Well, yes, but there are bigger questions involved,
right,
than that.
Yeah.
I think the immediate thing is one occupancy permit.
Right.
But I have reason to believe that the applicant in that case is going to ask to have it set on a later meeting. I don't have details about it, but I believe that that I'm going to have a conference a week from Friday about this, and we'll have more information on
Sounds
it at
good.
That time.
I think the citizens know that we are talking about it and we're looking at it
options.
As a plus, and yeah,
looking at all
what option, yeah.
Yeah, and, mm-hmm, and I can assure you that the Cunningham Meadows, Taylor Ridge, Needham Village, and what was the fourth one?
Fox Hollow.
Are not the only ones.
Yeah.
No, there's three.
Those are the major ones, but
those are the ones that are
a whole lot more than that.
But Kent Farms North.
Kent Farms North.
Right, sure. Right. I mean, there's multiple ones around the country. Right. And there are 40 or 50 that are partially finished subdivisions.
I will say to add what Mr. Nichols said, a lot of those remaining do have some bond available, but we need to match that with BDOT to see what needs to be done, whether that's enough to cover it.
Excuse me. Don't they ask to cancel those bonds then once they've been deleted of all its money then? I mean, where is the point that they're no longer responsible?
Well, there isn't a point at which they're no longer responsible unless the federal bankruptcy court relieves them of that responsibility.
Right.
So
so that sort of stays in place then?
Well, here's what happens. Just give you an idea of what this really means. Developer comes in, gets his subdivision plat recorded. In order to get it signed, he posts, and there are a number of ways to do this, but what we call posting a bond, what that means is he signs an obligation to the county to see that this work is completed. That obligation is then secured by something, whether it's a bonding company or whatever, or cash. Sometimes it's cash.
Billings?
I'm sorry?
Billings? Billings.
No.
Houses?
No, we do not accept that.
Okay.
There has to be much more liquid than that.
Okay.
What is common, has become very common, and it's so common that actually it's specified in the statute as an alternative, is a letter of credit. And what happens in that case is the developer goes to a bank and borrows as a contingent obligation an amount of money. The bank then sends this to the county saying, if they don't do what they say they're going to do, you come to us and draw on us and we'll pay you. That's become very common now. And it's good in the sense it's very liquid. Now, but in terms of the developer's responsibility, developer's responsibility doesn't cease. So if, for example, there were let's say he had a letter of credit that said, you know, Bank X issues guarantees the availability of $100,000 with the county on certification that there's something wrong, and for some reason that expires or lapses or it isn't sufficient in amount, whatever it might be, that's a limit on the bank's liability, but it's not a limit on the developer's liability.
Except he can go bankrupt.
If he goes bankrupt,
separate, right.
That kills virtually all debts.
Yeah.
And that's where we lie in the problem now.
Yeah.
Although it doesn't release successor developers.
Right. The problem is the successor developer has to post the bond.
Hmm. Well, that's the interesting question that we haven't litigated, but I believe the language of the statute does support that argument.
Uh-huh. You know, if you've got a developer with 20 lots and someone goes bankrupt, walks away, there's no further obligation because of the adjudicated bankruptcy, and some other developer comes in and buys those lots and now wants to build and start developing, the same plat had the requirement for the public road all along, and the developer is just a successor developer. It seems that they would be responsible in the same way that the original developer was, and it's not like they don't know. It's duly recorded and noted. They may not want to do it, but it's duly recorded and noted.
All right, thank you. Do we have any other new business? We've taken care of one. Anything else? If not, I will open the second public comments. Please come to the mic, give your name and your address, and you have 5 minutes to speak.
We have no public comment.
I'm not going to stand up there, but I just want to say thank you to the fire departments of Kent Store and Palmyra and Lake Monticello, and to the Lake Monticello Police, who responded to a fire caused by a lightning strike. And thanks to the fast-acting work of the Lake Monticello police officer, that fire was kept at
bay.
It was at a property that I have.
Great.
So it was minimized. So
yeah.
A warm felt thanks to them.
You didn't give me a name and address.
No.
All right. I will close the second public comment. We will go into closed meeting. Mr. Weaver.
Madam Chair, I move that the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711-8.1, Section 2.2-3711-8.6,
and
Section 2.2-3711-8.7 of the Code of Virginia, 1950, as amended for the purpose of discussing personnel, investment of funds, and legal matters.
All right. We have a second.
Second.
It has been moved by Mr. Weaver and second by Mr. Bryant that we enter in closed session. Anybody disagree?
No, ma'am.
All right.
There you go.
Chair votes. Let's go.
First year we went down to
Okay, Mr. Weaver.
Madam Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session.
Okay.
Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that to the best of each member's knowledge, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711-A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and only such public business matters as were identified in the motion of which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting. A second and a recorded vote needed.
All right. Second. May I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Recorded vote. Mr. Sheridan? Mr. Weaver? Mr. Bryan?
Who had the second?
Chair, aye. Second was by...
All three of us said it. Mr. Rothenberg was the
Sheridan
was
first.
Mr. Sheridan made it.
Yes.
Mr. Sheridan had the second.
Sheridan had the second.
I got it. Thank you.
Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Adjourn.
Second.
All right.
Thanks,
we adjourn. Mr. Sheridan, second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor of adjourning.
Aye.
And
bye.